For those of you who don't know who I am, I am Darth Vader, Dark Lord of the Sith. And, of course, I'm going to get two questions answered before we get going here. I probably get asked these more than any other question at any large event I am speaking at. Number one, I thought you were a little bit taller. And number two, I remember you being a little slimmer as well. Answer to question number one, the movies exaggerated my height. Very simple. Number two, I am addicted to Twinkies. Yes. For some reason, when you get your arm cut off, you get these weird cravings. So we're going to go ahead and get started here. This is SSL Wars, Dark Side of SSL. I'm going to be using the projector quite a bit here. I also brought my trusty lightsaber with me. Be able to show stuff to you guys a little bit easier. And let's get going. So a little bit about me. I am, like I said, Darth Vader, Dark Lord of the Sith, aka I help run the galaxy. I was a very powerful loser, oops, Jedi, I mean, I do have the highest midichlorian count, over 20,000 per cell. And finally, I am father to two adorable children, although they are very rebellious children. So I don't know how they're related to me, little punks. When I am not Darth Vader, I am Gary. He's kind of a loser. He's a consultant at Secure State here. He's got some stuff, certifications, and he does some stuff with breaking into stuff. And he worked for a Fortune 500 company at one point. So let's get going. I'm not going to dance around the subject at all, So what got me interested in SSL? Well, the answer to that is the rebels were getting their information back and forth, and we were intercepting it. Looked like a bunch of gibberish, and then we found out they were using this awesome technology called SSL. So I first, learned about it a little bit, and we've had some pretty good victories. A lot of you guys have heard about the Force. The Force is actually a series of SSL type attacks, but we'll talk about that a little bit more. So what is SSL? Well, SSL is something called public key cryptography. It's a type of cryptography. The whole idea behind public key cryptography is you got your public key and you got your private key. The public key you can share with everyone. You can post it out on Twitter, Facebook, anyone can see it, it's fine. The private key though, that's used to encrypt information as well. That must stay hidden at all costs. In fact, many rebels have died protecting their own private keys, and that's why we have this whole battle thing going on. So the public key can encrypt information, and the private key can decrypt information encrypted with the public key, and vice versa. So private key encrypts something, public key can decrypt it, and something encrypted with private key can be decrypted with the public key. That's important to note. That's kind of how public key cryptography works, or another fancy word would be asymmetric encryption works this way. So let's talk about this a little bit. How's it work? We got my rebellious punk here, Luke. He's trying to contact this dude named Han. Both of them very misled. What happens is Luke contacts Han and goes, "Hey, Han, let's go ahead and talk over an encrypted channel because I don't want my daddy listening to our conversations." So Han just goes, "Hey, that's fine with me, dude. Here's my certificate. Says I'm Han. You know it's me because I'm giving you my certificate." We'll talk a little bit about that in a little while, but that's kind of how it works. Can you guys hear me okay? Do I sound fuzzy? Okay. So what happens here? Well, Luke here Mr. Rebellion, goes and says, okay, we're going to, you know, we're going to go ahead and set up this encrypted channel then. And what he does is he takes Han's public key and he encrypts a secret message that he sends over to Han. And then all communication after that point is encrypted using the secret key that Luke chooses. So in this case, we'll run with something like Luke uses a word like cheese, okay, and he encrypts it with Han's public key, sends the word over to Han. Han goes, okay, our secret word is cheese, and all information from that point on is encrypted with the secret, very hard to guess word cheese. So SSL provides a bunch of stuff. Okay, so one of the things that SSL provides is confidentiality, unfortunately. Basically, the two parties, in this case Rebel Scum, they, you know, their channel that they trade information back and forth with is encrypted, and it keeps people from me from being able to see what they're talking about. So, in my example here, I'm sitting here trying to monitor my child's conversations like any good parent does. And but what happens is Luke and Han, they've created this encrypted tunnel, and they are keeping me from hearing vital information that's important to my child's welfare. And in this case, they're talking about the new location of their secret base. I am a victim, my friends. Other than confidentiality, SSL provides authentication. Authentication basically says, you know, it's used to basically say, how do I know who I'm talking to, right? So how does Han know that I, or Luke know that I'm not claiming to be Han and he's really talking to me? So how does SSL provide this authentication here? Well, he knows because he gives something called a certificate to Luke that proves that he is Han. And a certificate is a data file which binds a cryptographic key to a specific entity. In our example, it's Han.com. For you people not involved in the war, it's something like PayPal.com or maybe AOL.com or Google, you know, where you have your email and stuff like that. And basically, it's used to prove that you are who you claim to be. That's what a certificate, that's the primary purpose of the certificate. So how does it work? Well, this is the way certificates will work, okay? So you got the Rebel Alliance here, and the Rebel Alliance signs the certificate of Han, Luke, and Wedge. Wedge really is a person from Star Wars. For those of you who do not know. So what happens is the Rebel Alliance, or the Rebel Alliance, is basically when they signed this, they said, I know who Han is, and I vouch for Han. I know who he is, and he's provided his driver's license to me and social security number and all types of stuff to prove he's Han. And I know he's really Han, and so I'm going to sign a certificate. That's kind of the way that works. So, what happens? Well, each person trusts the Rebel Alliance certificate. So rather than having to trust Luke and Han's certificate and Wedge's certificate individually, all you have to do is trust the Rebel Alliance's certificate. And if you trust the Rebel Alliance, then you can trust anybody who signs or who the Rebel Alliance has signed, Luke and Han and all them. So they sign these certificates, and Rebel Alliance only signs a certificate after they know that they are who they claim to be. So this is kind of how it works here. Again, Mr. Rebellious himself. Han, I would like to establish a secure connection with you. I can communicate using strong or medium or weak encryption. Han says, sounds good. We'll use strong encryption. Here's a certificate proving I really am who I say I am. Then what happens is Luke's stupid little robot here takes a look at the certificate and says, okay, it's been signed by Rebel Alliance. We can trust Han.com because we trust the Rebel Alliance. Rebel Alliance has said that it really is Han, so we can trust them. But of course, you would never understand that if you listen to the stupid thing. So what happens if I make my own certificate? What happens if I make my own certificate for Han.com? Well, I don't have Han's birth certificate or his social security number or any of those things that that the Rebel Alliance would want to prove that he really is Han. So what happens if I make my own certificate and sign it myself? Basically, it says, Darth Vader says you can trust Han.com. So let's play it out. What happens? Luke goes to connect to me. And what I've done is when Luke goes to connect to Han, I've put myself in between the communication with Han and Luke. And what happens is I send a jamming signal to Han, making sure that Han cannot respond to Luke. Okay, taking out the bad influences in Luke's life, essentially. And what I do is I say, hey, Luke. Luke says, hey, Han, I want to connect with you, and we're going to make a secure connection here so my dad doesn't know our special plans that they always leave me out of. So, what happens? Well, I come over here and I say, hey, Luke. Son, buddy, old pal, I'm Han, and here's my certificate which says I am Han. What happens? Stupid squirrely robot man takes a look at that blasted certificate and goes, hey, Luke, I don't know who this guy is. It's not the Rebel Alliance who has signed the certificate, and I don't know who signed this guy's certificate. I really don't think it's or Han, so we probably should terminate our connection here. So there's been a lot of studies about what happens at this point here after R2 detail screams and does all of his stupid stuff. And what do you guys think actually happens? Luke generally will go, R2, you don't know what you're talking about. I see that it's Han's certificate. Let's go ahead and connect anyway. And Daddy's a happy man. So other than confidentiality and authentication, SSL also provides integrity. Integrity. What do you think that means? Well, the data has been signed with this special thing, the data has a message digest. Basically, it's a fingerprint associated with it. This fingerprint is used to verify the message has not been tampered with. How does that work? Well, let's take the message. The new Rebel base is at A1-34. Message is put through a series of steps to create a one-way hash. Basically, we'll call this magic. And over here, there's different forms of magic. There's one called SHA-1, MD-5, and MD-4. And those are the types of magic that he can use. So we've got the message, secret bases here, goes through a one-way hash, magic, and you get this weird number. And I'm not going to repeat that weird number because you'll fall asleep by the time I'm done. So you get this hash here. One thing that's important about the hash is you can't run a specific steps on this hash here to get back to the original message. You can brute force it and try a whole bunch of encrypting this message with lots and lots of message digests until you try to come up with this number here. But in theory, this right here, there should only be one of them around. So you get this hash here. You take this message, put it through the magic, get the hash. So let's look at how this works a little bit more now. So one hash is supposed to match up with one message. So the new rebel base is at A1-34. Goes through the magic. But look at this. If we just take the 4 and turn it through to a 5, we get a completely different hashback or magical message. Nothing in here is the same, except maybe some 3s or something there. But that's what it looks like. So how does this work? Well, what happens is the original message, here's the secret message here, it's put through the magic. The magic number is appended to the message, and then it's encrypted using the secret key that both of them agreed upon. The person receiving the message compares the hash that was generated, okay, with the hash that's a part of the message. So what they'll do is they'll take the secret message and they'll run it through the same magic that the original message was run through. Then what happens is it takes this message and compares it with this message here, the message digest here, and the message digest that they calculated. If the message digests match, they know that the message has not been tampered with. That's kind of how that works. That's how it provides integrity. So let's play this out here. So I have managed to put myself between Luke and Han's communication again. What happens is Luke sends encrypted data to Han. Now this is important. This is the problem for me. I am unable to decrypt this message because I don't have their special key. But one thing I can do is I can modify that message. So I take the message and move a couple ones to zeros, a couple zeros to ones, and by the time it makes it up to Han, I've modified that message. Although I don't know what the original message was, I've corrupted it. So what happens? Stupid yellow robot named C-3PO annoyingly says, "Captain Solo, I have hashed this message, and the hashes don't match up. Someone's modified this data. We need, it can't be trusted." So, stupid yellow thing. So, looks like SSL's got this stuff down, doesn't it? I mean, it can provide authentication. It can provide confidentiality. It can provide integrity. So, what can go wrong? This is where I come in. I have learned what can go wrong, and I have used it to my advantage. So let's talk about some of what can go wrong. So there's vulnerabilities due to misconfigurations. So SSL can be misconfigured when it is implemented. So what does that mean? Well, it means that so one of the common misconfigurations is the fully qualified domain name. In this case, PayPal, like portal.com, you guys might use something like paypal.com. So what happens is when someone has this domain and they request a certificate for a domain that is not the website that they want people to connect to. Okay, so they're creating a certificate for portal.com and they create a certificate for Rebel Alliance Secure Portal.com. So what happens? Well, in this case here, you can see here that this is the actual certificate. It was the common name is the name of the certificate. It's for rebelalliance.com. And when someone visits portal.com, right here you can see they visit portal.com, and the error message that Firefox, or as I like to call Firefox, Firefox Mace Windu, because it's awesome, gives you a lot of good information about what's going on, actually understands stuff. And it says, look at this. We've got a problem here. You're visiting portal.com, and the certificate that we're given is for rebelalliance.com or Rebel Alliance Secure Portal.com. Something, these don't match up. We can't vouch for this site that you're going to. So, other than Firefox Mace Windu, we also have IE Jar Jar Binks. And IE Jar Jar Binks goes and says,
I don't know what you're going through, Annie, but there's something wrong here, and don't know what you're doing, don't know what's going on, but here's a bunch of information.
So what happens? The fully qualified domain name does not match portal.com. What does this tell me? It tells me something's wrong and they don't recommend I connect. So, I mean, this really doesn't help me. So how do you fix it? Well, if you're developing a website for portal.com, you request a certificate for portal.com. Do you know how many times I've seen these websites out there that are like, you know, secureportal.com, and you take a look at the qualified domain name and it's like they created a certificate for 10.0.0.1. Oh yeah, that's real helpful. With a good thing though is, you know, the rebels do this all the time, so I'm not complaining. So the other one we have here is there are vulnerabilities due to misconfigurations are these certificates, they don't last forever. Eventually they do expire. So here, so the certificate for a site expires on 1 after Ballyavin. It is now 2 after the Ballyavin. And, you know, it's expired. So what happens? Well, right here we've got Firefox Windu. He says, I see that you're connecting to this website here, but the certificate's expired. We can't trust this website here. And then, of course, we have IE Jar Jar Binks. Again,
Annie, I don't know what's going on. Something's wrong.
And starts screaming and yelling and giving me a headache. And I don't know what he's talking about. So here's the certificate. You can see it was issued on 3/2/2011. That's actually about 11 years after the Battle of Yavin, if I remember. You can see that it has expired here. So that's that vulnerability. How do you fix it? Well, it's pretty simple, right? So you get rid of your expired certificates and you replace them with certificates that are not expired. This is not rocket science. Another one here. The certificate's not signed by a trusted certificate authority. This could be certificate authority, in our cases, Rebel Alliance. But in your guys' world, not far, far away in another galaxy, would be something like VeriSign. So what happens is, or another thing, you could create your own certificates in-house. If you do that, you need to set up a trust relationship between that certificate authority and the systems on your network. So that's another thing. If you don't set that relationship up, there's going to be some problems. Kind of like this one. They go to Rebel Alliance SecurePortal.com. Mace Windu says, the certificate is not trusted because the issue certificate is not trusted, or the issuer certificate is not trusted. So basically he's saying, we don't know the person who signed the certificate. It could be me, could be evil hacker in Ukraine, could be anyone. So there's something wrong. And then you've got our buddy. Again, no information that I can use to make an intelligent decision, just it's screaming at me. And that really helps. The solution is have your certificate signed by a trusted certificate authority, Rebel Alliance, VeriSign, Komodo, or create some sort of trust relationship between your server and clients. And then there's vulnerabilities due to misconfiguration. So So what's the big deal, right? I mean, so someone yells at you. You got Jar Jar Binks screaming at you. You got Mace Windu telling you something's wrong. So what's the big deal? I mean, my session's still encrypted, right? The information's still encrypted. So why do I care about these error messages? So this is why you should care about these error messages. Because if every time you go to RebelAllianceSecurePortal.com, something screams at you, and what happens if I create my own certificate for RebelAlliance.com, and when you go to connect to me, something screams at you? So something's always screaming at you, so how do you know if it's ever a valid certificate, right? So I can create a man in the middle then, which I create my own certificates, and I claim to be the sites that you're connecting to, and I take all of the sensitive information you're sending to that website. And it's very, very easy to do this. There's plenty of tools online that can do these types of attacks that will actually dynamically create certificates for you, such as Kane or SSL Sniff, which we'll be talking about here in a little while. So, SSL Sniff. It was created by a dark Sith Lord named Sith Marlin Spike. Many of you know him by Moxie. The specific attack we're going to talk about is the SSL null prefix attack. Although SSL Sniff is also good at other sort of SSL type of attacks as well, but this is the one we're going to talk about. So what is the null prefix attack? Well, it's pretty awesome. This is how SSL should work. Rebellious Punk contacts RebelAlliance.com. He even puts in https://RebelAlliance.com. And he says, that is me, here is my certificate. He sends that back to Rebellious Punk. So Luke is going to view the certificate for the following. Is the certificate valid for the site I am accessing? Is the certificate trustworthy? And has the certificate been revoked? These are the things that he is going to look for. So there's a problem here. Okay, so when I go to request a certificate from, we'll say, VeriSign, VeriSign stores the common name of the certificate, like paypal.com, or loop.com, it uses these things called Pascal strings, okay? It stores it as a Pascal string. And that's what can happen in a Pascal string, though, is the length, string length is determined by a series of bytes at the front of the string data. So you've got your common name here, okay? www.rebelalliance.com, null character, darthvader.com. And that is a valid common name or a name for a certificate. The reason for that is, this is how it stores it in memory, is it says right here is a byte that says that the next four characters is the data of the string. And in this case, it's INFO. And it says the very first four characters is the length. So this is how a Pascal string works. The problem is, most SSL implementations, like Internet Explorer and Firefox, they actually parse the common name out, and they treat it as a C string. Okay? The difference with a C string is this. What happens is, you look into an area of memory here, and you keep reading. All of these bytes are supposed to be string data until you hit the null character. As soon as you hit that null character, you know that you have reached the end of the string. So this is where the problem comes in. So if an attacker owned DarthVader.com, they could get a certificate. So if I owned, in this case I do, DarthVader.com, you could get a certificate named RebelAlliance.com null character.darthvader.com. That is, since I own darthvader.com, I can get this subdomain here. VeriSign and everybody, no one's going to yell at me because, after all, I own darthvader.com. So the CA would see the root domain was owned by me and go ahead and issue the certificate. And most SSL implementations would read the certificate as rebelalliance.com. The reason for that is because it's reading this like a C string, it's going to go rebelalliance.com. Oh, I hit my null character. And then as soon as it hits this, it's going to say, oh, that's the end of the common name. And it's going to check for this. It's going to say, well, is the he's connecting to rebelalliance.com. Is the certificate for rebelalliance.com? It's going to say, oh, yeah, it sure is. Then it's going to say, well, is it has it expired or anything? I say, nope, not expired. It'll say, okay, yeah, go ahead and connect. No error messages or anything. Nothing yells at me. So this is how it plays out. Here's Luke, here's me, and here's rebelalliance.com. I've managed to put myself between Luke and rebelalliance.com, and he goes to connect to, he's a smart guy. He even puts HTTPS in here. https://// rebelalliance.com, and I forward the packet onto rebelalliance.com, my own connection to rebelalliance.com here. So rebelalliance.com sends me their certificate for rebelalliance.com, and then what happens is I set up a secure connection between them and me, and then I set up another secure connection with me and Luke, and I send Luke the rebelalliance.com null character certificate. He thinks he's connecting to the rebelalliance.com, and I'm actually the one who he's connecting to. So that's kind of the way this attack works. The solution, update your stuff. Patch. And let's go ahead and do a demo. So this is the victim's ARP cache before ARP cache poisoning. So in order to do this type of attack, I have to be able to put myself between Han and Luke, and I do that through ARP cache poisoning. And in here, you can see, right here is the default gateway's IP address, and it's matched with its MAC address here. And here's me and my MAC address, and you'll see that they're completely different, right? So let's go take a look at my MAC address. This is me on this machine here. You'll see there is my IP address right there, and there's my MAC address. Let's set up the attack. So I set up my computer to forward traffic that comes in on my interface, just forward it out. I then set up an IP table that says anything for port 443 should get redirected to port 50,000. I then run the ARP cache poisoning stuff, which is ARP, in this case ARP spoof, and then I'm putting myself in between the victim's IP address and the default gateway there. And then I use SSL sniff and tell it to listen on port 50,000. I log the information. I only capture POST requests, and right here is the certificates that I'm using, the null prefix certificate path. So this is what happens to the victim after they've listened to enough of my propaganda. To take a look, now you'll see that the victim thinks my MAC address is the same MAC address as the default gateway. Victim visits PayPal. This is my favorite part. Victim specifically goes to https://paypal.com. So they think they're connecting to the correct website. And they're even put in the S there, right? Look at this. Nothing yells at them. they honestly believe that they are connecting to PayPal.com, but it's actually me. And you'll see here a byproduct of my son not joining the dark side is he's become a little bit stupid. He even forgets his password. Stupid son. So I win. I get the bad credentials my son attempted. But if he had typed in the right credentials, I would have gotten those too. So I'm going to look in the log file. What you're going to see in the log file is there's his username and there's his password. And dark side wins. Na 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 na. Okay. Let's take a look at the next example here. SSL Strip. Now this one's pretty awesome. So for SSL Strip, again, developed by Seth Marlinspike, it hijacks SSL the session before the session over SSL is ever even created. How does that work? It's based off of the premise that people only encounter HTTPS through redirects and links. Basically, nobody's going to type https://PayPal.com into their browser. They're most likely going to go to PayPal, and then there's going to be a redirect that redirects them to a HTTPS version of the PayPal.com website. So this is the way that information should be encountered through redirects. So I go to Rebel, or Luke goes to http://rebelalliance.com. He's redirected to https://rebelalliance.com. And then what happens? Well, rebelalliance.com tells him to use the secure version of the website. And you can see here, this is the actual data that's flowing back and forth. You can see that he goes to paypal.com with a regular HTTP connection here, host www.paypal.com, and he gets this redirect that says, go to https, www.paypal.com. The second way that SSL is encountered is through links. Basically, Luke goes to a website, and he sees a link that says, for more information, go to https://rebelalliance.com. Luke clicks on the link and is redirected to rebelalliance.com. And you can see here, here's the sign-in for Google, and it's over this HTTPS. It's a redirect or link to the HTTPS version of the page. So this is the way that SSL strip works. Luke goes to rebelalliance.com, and if you don't specify HTTPS, it's going to try HTTP first. He's then redirected to rebelalliance.com, or what happens is I then go ahead and forward this on to rebelalliance.com, and I add the S in there. Basically, I'm trying the secure connection with the site. The site then says, I am rebelalliance.com, please log in. And what I do is I set up a secure connection here, and I turn it back into HTTP traffic and send it out to rebelalliance.com and ask him to please log in here. What happens? Well, here's Luke. Here are my credentials. He sends them to me over HTTP traffic. It's not encrypted. And I then go ahead and forward it on over this HTTPS tunnel. And you'll see this is actual traffic from when SSL Strip is running. Go to paypal.com, and paypal.com says, sure, no redirect or anything. It just gives a OK message back to Luke. Here's how it works. If you visit it through a link, HTTP get request to a site.com. So first, Luke connects to site.com. It's not HTTPS, it's just site.com, just a regular HTTP page. Well, what happens is site.com gives him the web page or the page, and in the web page is a link for rebelalliance.com. I then switch out the HTTPS for an HTTP version of the link and forward it on to Luke. Luke selects the HTTP link, and what happens? Well, I create an HTTPS connection over here and only give him the HTTP version of the page. And right here, this is an actual link that you'll see if you're using SSL strip. And it's right here, HTTP sign in, and it's right here. So let's take a look at the demo. So here is Luke's ARP cache. And you'll see that the IP address, it's different for the MAC address from me and from the default gateway here. You'll see here's my MAC address. There's my IP, and there's my MAC address there. I then set up the attack. I forward traffic on through my machine. So information that comes to me, I'm going to forward out. I'm going to set up a routing rule for information going to port 80. I'm going to forward out to 50,000. 80 is just HTTP traffic. I'm again going to ARP cache poison using ARP spoof. And then I'm going to run SSL strip, and I'm going to give it a fake lock icon, give Luke a fake lock icon, log post information, and listen on port 50,000. And then victim's MAC address after the ARP cache poisoning. You're going to see that the IP address is now the same as the MAC address for both me and the default gateway. And Luke visits paypal.com. And you'll see that the session is never, the HTTPS version of the session is never created. And he's even got the pretty little lock icon. Because we all know that if you have a lock icon, you are very secure. And stupid son forgets his password. But I get his forgotten password anyway. Taking a look at the log, and you'll see that the email test with a password of test. And I've logged his data. And the dark side wins. So. Are there, do we have time for questions? Okay, any questions? Yes?
Are there people out there that are still mistaking the lock icon for the, putting a lock icon for the fab icon, thinking that they're sort of looking down the corner or anything like that?
I'm sure there are. Most people, when they go to a website with a bad certificate, they'll say yes to that. So there was actually a study of someone who set up a Tor exit node and put some, a certificate, bad certificate up on it for any website people visited, and people just never said no. In fact, it kind of shocked him, and he actually had to test it out to make sure people really weren't, that there wasn't something wrong with his script. So yes, it does happen. Yes?
Can you go into a little detail on ARP cache poisoning?
Sure. What happens with ARP cache poisoning is when you go to connect out to the internet, when you go to paypal.com or something like that. What you're actually doing is you need to know how to get to paypal.com. And in order to do that, you send out an ARP request for your default gateway. What happens is the ARP request hits the default gateway, and the default gateway says, here's my MAC address. And you can basically find me if you send information to this MAC address. So the MAC address is tied to the IP address. Well, with ARP cache poisoning, when the person yells, who has this IP address, I'm always there to basically tell the router, shut up, that's me. And I send the response and say, here's my MAC address. I'm actually the default gateway. Therefore, all information is redirected to me, and I redirect that information then onto the real default gateway, putting myself in between the session. Any other questions? No? All right. Yes?
You know if mobile browsers would patch against the first attack?
To be honest with you, I've not done any testing with mobile browsers. I don't know. I would hope so at this point, but I can't say a definite yes or no. Yes?
Why don't the certificate agencies reject null prefix?
The null prefix attack, they actually did create a CRL, or they use their CRL, certificate revocation list server, to actually reject those bad certificates. But there's actually a second. What happens is, so when I go to connect to paypal.com, I'll ask the CRL if this is still a good certificate, and then this it will actually respond back and say if it's still a good certificate or not. But what's interesting is you can bypass that, and the reason being is because when you go to send out a request to see if that's still a valid certificate, if the attacker sends back a response that basically says try again later, it goes ahead and sets up that connection anyway. Any other questions? All right, well, thank you guys, and you all have a good night.